Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Open Mic Session. Today's topic is SSL and TLS in WebSphere MQ. My name is Joseph Lam, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide number 2. In today's Open Mic session, we will start off by introducing to you our panel of experts for the day. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to SSL and TLS in WebSphere MQ. Next, our panel of experts will answer questions that were pre-submitted to us through email. Then, we will open the lines for live Q&A period. Finally, the session will end with a summary of the Open Mic session. Moving on to slide number 3. At this time, I would like to introduce to you our panel of experts for today's call. Our panel consists of Alex Fenders, WebSphere MQ New Market Research Development. Next, we have Andrew Ackerhurst, WebSphere MQ Distributed L3 Support. Then, we have Calista Stevens, WebSphere MQ System I Level 2 Support.
Good morning. This is Calista Stevens, and I've worked in WebSphere MQ Level 2 Support on IBM I for just over 11 years. Thank you, Joseph.
Thanks, Calista. Next, we have Jonathan Ramsey, WebSphere MQ Lead System I Software Developer.
Good morning, everyone. I'm John Ramsey. I've worked in the IBM I WebSphere MQ team for 11 years. I worked on the SSL implementation back in MQ 5.3 and version 6.
Thank you, Jonathan. Then we have Mike Horan, WebSphere MQ Distributed Software Developer.
I've worked in distributed MQ development for over 10 years. I was involved in the Windows and Unix work on for SSL on 5.3 and version 6 and since then as well.
Thank you, Mike. Next, we have Reed Francis, WebSphere MQ COS Level 3 Support.
Hi, I'm Reece, and I've worked in the Level 3 WebSphere MQ for ZOS team for the last 4 years.
Thank you, Reece. Then we have Tamika Woody, WebSphere MQ Windows Level 2 Support.
Good morning. I have worked with WebSphere MQ, IBM I, and Windows for almost 7 years.
Thank you, Tamika. Next, we have Mark Romack, WebSphere MQ COS Level 2 TSANet Program Manager.
Good morning, all. Worked on WebSphere MQ for about the last 6 years, and I work, most of the SSL ZOS PMRs for our team.
Thank you, Mark. And finally, we have Tiffany Pearson, WebSphere MQ Unix Level 2 Support.
Good morning. This is Tiffany Pearson, and I've worked in WebSphere MQ Level 2 for the last 12 years.
Thank you, Tiffany. Now, before we get to the question and answer period, our panel would like to give you a technical overview of the topic. Moving on to slide number 4, and please go ahead, Tiffany.
Thank you, Joseph. Good morning, everyone. Today, we're going to address the following items: SSL terminology, common certificate administration tasks, basic configuration, a timeline of the features that have been added to MQSSL over the years, and lastly, the differences between the platforms. Please turn to slide number 5. Security in WebSphere MQ is very important, and SSL, also known as TLS, is a great way to secure queue managers. Most users are familiar with SSL, but find it challenging to connect a queue manager to an SSL-secured network, to replace an expired certificate, or to set up SSL for client applications. We will explain more about these tasks and also answer your questions. Please turn to slide number 6, and I'm turning back over to Joseph.
Thank you, Tiffany. We will now begin our question and answer session with questions that were pre-submitted to us before the webcast. We have a total of 6 pre-submitted questions. I will now hand the presentation over to our panel of experts by moving on to question number 1 on slide number 6.
Okay, thank you, Joseph. This is Tiffany again. Question number 1 is, what are CA certificates, signer certificates, personal certificates, client certificates, and server certificates? If you can move to slide number 7, please. And I'm going to address the answer to question 1 with regards to Windows and Unix. On Unix and Windows, we use CA, signer, and personal certificates. A CA certificate is a certificate that is issued by a certificate authority, such as VeriSign or NTrust. This type of certificate allows a queue manager or client to verify certificates received from the remote end. A signer certificate is a trusted certificate. This could be a CA certificate from a certificate authority, or it could be a public certificate from a self-signed personal certificate from the partner queue manager. And these are imported into your key repository. Now, a personal certificate is a certificate that is assigned to a specific entity by a certificate authority. Now, when I say specific entity, I mean like a queue manager or a client. You could also have a self-signed personal certificate. Each queue manager can only have 1 personal certificate. And if you can move to slide 8, please, I'm turning over to Calista.
Good morning. This is Calista Stevens, and I will address question 1 for IBMI. CA certificates are also used on IBMI, and in addition to using third-party signed CAs on IBMI, you can also create local CA certificates to use for signing server or client certificates, eliminating the step to involve a third-party signer. Server certificates are signed by the CA or the certificate authority and authenticate the client to the server and the server to the client. They contain the private and corresponding public keys. I will now turn the presentation over to Rhys Francis. Please turn to slide 9.
Hi, this is Rhys Francis. I'm answering this question from the ZOS point of view. Certificates used on the ZOS platform are the same as used on the other platforms, so I'd like to introduce some ZOS-specific bits of terminology here. Specifically, the key ring is the term for the key repository that's used on the ZOS platform. Certificates are stored in the RACF database and are then connected to the key rings that require those certificates. I'd also like to mention certificate name filters, CNFs. These are used to associate certificates that are received from a remote user with a user that is defined to RACF without requiring that certificate to be added to the RACF database. I'd now like to move on to slide 10 and hand over to Tamika.
Good morning again. This is Tamika Woody. I will be handling question 2, which is, what is a certificate chain and how do I view it? Please turn to slide 11. I will continue on page 11 to discuss question 2 as it relates to Windows. A certificate chain, or as some call it, a certification path, is a list of certificates which are used to authenticate a queue manager or client. The chain starts with the personal certificate. The personal certificate is signed by another certificate. This certificate can be the intermediate certificate or a root certificate. If it is the intermediate certificate, then it will be signed by another certificate. This process will continue until the root certificate is reached. The root certificate is signed by itself. All certificates in a chain must be installed so the chain is verified. If you would like more information on how certificate chains work, you can use the links that are provided below for WebSphere MQ version 6 and WebSphere MQ version 7. Can you please turn to slide 12? Now, let's discuss how you are able to view the certificate chain on Windows. There are multiple ways you can view the certificate, including using the runmq ckm commands on the command line. You can use a browser of your choice or other external applications. However, I will briefly discuss the two most common methods to view the certificate. The first method is using the Windows Explorer. You may only use this method when you've been given a file with the extension .cer. You should open the Windows Explorer and select the directory where you have placed the certificate. Double-click on the .cer file, and the certificate panel will open. Then, select the tab for certification packs to display the details. The other method to display the certificate chain involves using the IBM Key Management tool, which is supplied with the WebSphere MQ product. Start the IBM Key Management tool and open the key database. Select personal certificates from the drop-down. Once the personal certificates are displayed, double-click on the certificate. Take note of the value for the CN under the issued by heading. If this is a self-signed certificate, then the value in the CN will be the certificate name itself. Otherwise, it identifies a CA certificate. To view the CA certificate, select Signer Certificates from the drop-down. Double-click the Signer Certificate, which has the same name as the value in the issued by you just looked at. Check the issued by in the signer to see if it is signed by itself. If it is signed by itself, then this is the root CA. Otherwise, if the CA is signed by another CA, it is considered an intermediate CA. You will then need to view the next CA for its issued by value until you reach the root CA. Please move to slide 13, and I will be turning it over to Tiffany.
Thank you, Tamika. I'm going to be addressing the answer to question two as it relates to Unix. The certificate chain on Unix is actually the same as Tamika discussed for Windows. On Unix, to view the certificate chain, we use the GSK7CMD command to list the details of the certificates in the key database. Once they are listed, you should take note of the issued by and issued to fields to make sure that they match all the way up the chain for each certificate. And it should be noted that the subject field in the GSK7CMD output holds the same information as you would see for issue 2 on Windows. Please move to slide number 14, and I'm turning over to Jonathan Rumsey.
Okay, good morning again, everyone. I'm going to answer question 2 with regards to the IBMI platform. There are two ways which you can check a certificate chain. Tamika has already described what is a certificate chain. The first option is to go through the central administration point for certificates on IBMI, which is called Digital Certificate Manager, or DCM for short, and that's based on a web page. From there, you can go into a key repository store and select a certificate, and you can view that certificate. And again, that will contain a signer certificate or who the certificate was issued by and issued to. And you can follow that for each certificate to work your way back up from a personal certificate right back to the root CA certificate. The alternative is to export a service certificate to a PKCS12 file and use a Java key tool through the Q shell to list all of the intermediate certificates and the root CA certificate for a particular file. I've given an example of how you might do that on this foil. I'd like to move on to slide 15 and pass over to Mark Womack, who will answer this question for the ZRS platform.
Okay, thanks much, Jonathan. The certificate chain on ZOS is conceptually the same as on all the other platforms. There's a few differences. For instance, we don't have an SSL check tool, so if you have to review your certificate chains on ZOS, you'll do it manually. And this is done through the use of certain RAC desert commands. The most important would probably be a RAC desert issued for a Listering. Listering gives you output for the particular keyring that you have associated with the queue manager. And also, you can issue a RAC desert list label for any particular certificate you're looking for. For instance, your personal cert with the standard IBM WebSphere name given to it. So that'll give you a detail on your personal certificates. Now, for ZOS, there's some key fields that are analogous to the ones you'll find on distributed, but the naming is a little bit different. For instance, the distributed guys use issued by and issued to fields. For us, in order to correlate the signers to signed, we use fields called issuer name and subject name. So issuer name and subject name would be analogous. That information provides you with the distinguished name information that you use in order to determine which personal certificate you're looking at, and also to determine which entity has signed that certificate, in other words, who the issuer was. And for further identification, because some certificates can have the same issuer name, you can use the serial number associated with the certificate to be totally unique about which certificate you've taken a look at. And I think, as one of the other speakers said already, if you can check the issuer name and the subject name, and if they're the same on a certificate, then you've reached the base or the root of your chain, and there are no additional certificates that you need to complete your chain. However, if they differ, then you need to do additional checks and find the certificate which contains a subject name that is the same as this certificate's issuer name. The issuer that you find is the certificate that signed the personal cert that you're looking at. And if an issuer is not found, this can mean that the chain of trust is incomplete. The diagram there shows what a conceptual chain of trust looks like. If you do have an incomplete chain of trust, that will result in different messages depending on which side we're authenticating. That will either be an CSQX 633E message or a CSQX 634. And a 633 usually means that the public signer certificate from the remote end is not located on this local queue manager. The 634 means the exact opposite. That is, the local host has sent personal certificates to the remote side, but we did not provide him the signer certificates that he can use to confirm the identity of that certificate that he received. So that means the remote side won't have any way to validate any personal certs that you've sent. And whatever certs are sent to the remote side have to represent a complete authentication chain using that issuer name, subject name method. And the same is true for the local side. The only difference is that local certs present in the keyring are used to authenticate the remote side's personal certs once they're received from the remote side. So you have to think of SSL as a reciprocal relationship where if you can understand it that way, then you'll know that the other side needs sort of the opposite side's signing certs. And let's move on to Andrew and slide 16, please.
Very much. This is Andrew Akehurst with question 3, which is, how do I renew an expired certificate? So if we move forward to slide 17, please. And I will address this question for Windows and Unix platforms. To renew an expired certificate, this talks about personal certificates specifically, because these tend to be quite short-lived. They typically last for a year or less in expiry terms. So to generate one of these, you have to generate a new certificate request based on the existing certificate using the gskit certificate recreate command, and you give it the label of the expiring certificate to be replaced, which will normally be your IBM WebSphere MQ name corresponding to your queue manager or client. You send that request away to the certificate authority, and they will send you back a signed certificate, and then you perform the gskit receive operation to receive the replacement certificate into the key repository. And once you've done that, having changed certificates in the key repository, it's important to remember to issue the refresh security type SSL command so that any cached certificates are cleared and then the new certificate will be picked up. We then move forward to slide 18, and then Calista will address this for IBM I.
Hello again. Yeah, I will answer this question as it relates to IBM I. On IBM I, if you are using private key stores, you can renew an expired certificate using DCM, or the Digital Certificate Manager. You have to prepare a new or renewed certificate in a temporary certificate store first. Then you want to copy it into a current certificate store, and then you want to refresh the key repository to pick up the changes. And as you can see on slide 18, step-by-step instructions have been provided. This information can also be found on the web in DCF item 120-2485. Please turn to slide 19. If you're using the system store on IBM i, you can create a temporary certificate with any label name, copy it into the system store, assign it to the queue manager, and then refresh the queue repository to pick up the changes. Now I'll turn the presentation over to Mark. Please turn to slide 20.
This is question 3 for ZOS, and this of course, involves renewing a certificate. So I had a user recently who wanted to find a shortcut way around renewing a certificate that was about to expire. He didn't want to go through the process of submitting a request back to the CA, but the process we document requires that you do that, and so that's TechNote 1209664, which you see here on your foil. Those steps should be followed exactly as documented. The last step says to issue a refresh security to make all changes take effect. And although we document in our books that on all other platforms, refresh security will work on all other platforms, whether changes were actually made or not. For ZOS, that's not necessarily true depending on the types of changes that were made. So good practice is to always issue a refresh security. And depending on just how invasive the change was, it can also be important to cycle the chin init if you find that your changes look good but they're still not taking effect. And that's applicable to some releases going all the way back to 5.3.1 to present day. And, you know, like I say, this is because ZOS will still issue a message that the refresh was successful, but, you know, we may not necessarily make the changes that you might expect would be done, so you should make sure you do a cycle of the chin in it as well. I guess we'll go ahead now and move on to slide 21 and Tamika.
Thanks, Mark. Okay, this is question 4, and the question is, how do I make sure that SSL TLS is set up correctly? Please move to slide 22. I will handle the question 4 for Windows as well, and let's start by saying first, you need to determine if you're performing one-way or two-way authentication by reviewing the receiver channel or the server connection channel on the queue manager. If the SSL client authentication or SSL CAuth parameter is set to optional, only one certificate is required for the server queue manager. If it is set to required, then one certificate is necessary for the server queue manager and one certificate is necessary for the client side. While viewing the receiver channel or server connection channel properties, you can verify the SSL cipher spec, which is set in the SSL site parameter. Ensure that the sender channel or client connection channel has the exact same value set. On the server queue manager properties, you should verify the value of the SSL key repository parameter. If the client side is a queue manager, please verify that same parameter on its queue manager properties. On the server queue manager also, check to ensure the personal certificate named IBM WebSphere MQ, followed by the queue manager name, is located in the key database of the SSL queue repository that you have set. The CA certificate chain will need to be extracted and transferred to the client side so it may be added to the key database of the client. If the client side is a Java application, ensure the type of database containing the certificates are within a Java key store file, and it should have an extension of .jks. Once the CA certificates are added to the client side, you should ensure the environment variables for MQSSL key are MQCHLLIB and MQCHLTAB are set. These environment variables are not required for a Java application or when a queue manager serves as the client side. Finally, if this is two-way authentication, you should extract the CA chain from the client certificate named IBM WebSphere MQ, followed by the client queue manager name, or if you're using a client application, it will be followed by the client user ID, and transfer it to the server queue manager for import into its key database list of signed certificates. Please move to slide 23, and I will pass it off to Andy.
Thank you. So on slide 23, we'll look at how to check SSL setups on Unix. We'll run through some of the common configuration errors on this platform. So the first thing to do is always check the WebSphereMQ error logs for the system and for the queue manager. SSL TLS errors are always logged, and if you don't find anything particularly useful at the one end of the channel, always go and look at the other side of the connection, at the remote queue manager, and check the error logs for that also. But then we'll talk through a few of the other things that can go wrong. Already for Windows, we looked at setting the SSL PR attribute correctly. Adding the .kdb suffix into that value is a common mistake. It has to be the stem name, not including the KDB. Also, the SSL KR attribute sometimes can point at a different set of files from the one that you've been configuring. It's easy to do when you have a system with lots of queue managers on it to add certificates to one key database and your queue manager be using a different key database. So it's always important to check the location that refers to. Slide 24, using the wrong type of key database for your scenario, again, similar to Windows, as mentioned, I think, earlier on, you have to have the right sort of key database. Java applications use the JKS-style key database, including the Explorer GUI. There's also C++, .NET Unmanaged, MQ client applications, which use the CMS, the KDB style of key database, as do the queue managers themselves. And also I mentioned Category 3 support pack, MS81, which is MQIPT, and that uses PKCS12. So when you've got end-to-end cryptography, it's important to make sure all components have the right key database type. On slide 25, transferring binary certificates or key database files across an ASCII mode FTP connection, it can happen, and it does corrupt the files if you do it. So it's important to remember, if you transfer things via FTP, it's generally best to stick to binary mode, certainly for the KDB files. Also, the password stash file. WebSphereMQ queue managers and clients also need a stashed copy of the password so that they can open the key database and access all the certificates and keys therein. If you've forgotten to create a stash file for your KDB file, there's an example command for the Unix platform here that shows how to create one after your KDB has been created. On slide 26, touch upon file permissions. If it's a client application, the client application's effective user ID needs permission to be able to read from the key database files and including the stash file. And likewise, for the queue manager, the MQM user and group need to have the appropriate permissions so that they can read the files. I've got some examples here of some Unix JOIN commands and chmod commands for setting those for both a queue manager and also a client application running as user thread. On slide 27, queue manager certificate not having the correct label. Talked about the naming convention earlier on for Windows. It's the same naming convention on Unix again. Also, on Windows, it was mentioned about the SSLC auth required setting on the channel definition. And in that case, the client does have to have its own personal certificate. So again, that's the same for the Unix platform. There are such things as default certificates as well, which I don't want to explain here, but I've included an APAR number for those people who might be interested in default certificate support. On slide 28, expired certificates are often a problem. We talked earlier on about how to renew expired certificates. These commands, which have already been mentioned earlier, also show you the expiry date, valid from and valid to. That shows you the times when the certificate is valid. So if your system time is outside those times, it means your certificate is expired, and so you need to go through the kind of procedure that we talked about earlier on. Slide 29, again, reiterating what we said earlier about remembering to issue a refresh security type SSL command to clear any certificates that might be cached. This is when you've made any changes to the contents of your key repository. We now move on to slide number 30, I can hand over to Calista for IBM I.
Thanks, Andrew. Checking your setup for SSL on IBM I. You'll find that many of the basic steps to set up SSL are common across the IBM I and distributed platforms. However, there are a couple things that are unique to IBM I. Some of the common things to check for when with your SSL setup on IBM I are verifying that the key store location is correct and specified without the KDB extension, verifying that the password for the key store has been specified on the queue manager, and that it's been specified in quotes. This step is not necessary if you're using the system store, however. For private key stores, you want to verify that QMQM has read-write authority to the private key store files KDB and RDB, as well as the stash file. Also for private stores, you want to verify that QMQM has read-write execute authority to the directory where the key store is located. And again, for private key stores, you want to verify that the CA and server certificates exist in the specified key store and that the server certificate label name is specified as IBM WebSphere MQ, followed by the queue manager name folded to lowercase. Just want to also note here that the that label name, the IBM WebSphere MQ, followed by the queue manager name, is not required when you're using the system store. You also want to verify that both your sender and receiver channels cipher spec attributes match or are the same. You also want to verify that the receiver channel SSL client authentication attribute is correct for the intended type of authentication to take place. So, for example, if it's one-way, then it should indicate optional, and if it's two-way, it should indicate required. Also, when using private key stores to do one-way or two-way authentication, you want to verify that the server and the client have exchanged CAs and that both the server and the client have server certificates. When using the system key store, you want to verify that the server certificate has been assigned to the application or the queue manager, and this must be done on the client for one-way authentication and on both the client and the server for two-way authentication. And lastly, when incorporating changes, as is the case for both Windows and Unix, you want to make sure that your channels are stopped and that the SSL key repository cache has been refreshed prior to starting the channels when you've made updates to your certificates. Now I'll turn it over to Reese. Francis, please turn to slide 31.
All right. Speaking about the ZOS platform now, first of all, I'd like to draw attention to two queue manager attributes which need to be set in order to use SSL on Zeos. First of all is the SSL tasks attribute. It defaults to zero and specifies the number of tasks the channel initiator can use for SSL-related purposes. This needs to be set to a minimum of two for SSL to be enabled. Secondly, as on other platforms, the SSL keyr attribute needs to be set, and on ZOS, this needs to name the key ring key manager will use, and this key ring needs to have been defined in RACF and should have all the necessary certificates connected to it. We can now move on to slide number 32, please. As on the other platforms, the key managers use a very specific label. As on those platforms, the label is IBM WebSphere MQ followed by the key manager name, but I'd like to draw your attention to the fact that on ZOS, the capitalization is different. It is not all in lowercase as on the other platforms. The W in WebSphere and the MQ are uppercase, and the name of the queue manager will be uppercase as well. Additionally, a label with the name IBM WebSphere MQ followed by the queue sharing name can be also be used if shared channel is using SSL. Next, I'd like to mention the channel user ID. On ZOS, the certificate received from the remote end can be associated with a particular user that is defined to RACF. And so you need to ensure that that user has got the appropriate authority to access any WebSphere MQ resources, such as queues. And the way this user ID is determined is listed here. If the received certificate exists in the RACF database and has been associated with a user ID, then the channel initiator will use that user ID when checking for authority to access queues and other resources. If the certificate doesn't exist in the RACF database, it may be mapped to a user ID using a certificate name filter, and these map from either the subject or the issuer DN and filter, so anything with a matching the filter will map to a particular user ID. And finally, if neither of these methods are used to associate a user with a particular certificate, then the channel initiated user ID will be used, and this is the same as if the channel was not using SSL. And finally, this is just the authority of the channel user ID. And depending on the red level authority of the channel initiator, there may be other user IDs that also are checked, and so may also need authority to the WebSphere MQ resources. For example, the MCA user may also be checked. We now move on to slide number 33, and I'll hand over to Mike for the next question.
All right, Mike Horan here. I'm going to answer question 5, what has changed in MQ SSL TLS since version 5.3? So we go through the different versions and the different platforms and see what changes have happened. SSL support was first introduced in MQ 5.3 across all the major platforms. There were certain things that really enhanced, but that needed to be made to it that applied to all the platforms. So at version 6, we introduced some fairly major enhancements. First is secret key reset, where the secret key that's established during the SSL negotiation is reset after a certain number of bytes of data have flowed or after a channel has gone idle. Then there's refresh security type SSL, which allows you to actually, without taking a queue manager down, to particularly to refresh the certificates that are being used. That's had some other uses as well. And we did claim TLS CipherSpec support at 5.3, but it didn't actually work properly until version 6. We provided information on the distinguished name of the owner of the certificate at 5.3, but we extended that at version 6 to include the issuer of the certificate. That's provided in the channel states and to security exits. And we allowed, there were SSL events at 5.3, but they couldn't be configured on and off separately from other channel events, and that was introduced also at version 6. In general, there have been currency changes. More stronger CipherSpecs have been introduced to the underlying SSL providers, which we've reflected. More advanced cryptographic cards have come along, some of which we've supported. I'm now moving on to slide 35. The biggest change, though, probably that has come along applies on the Windows only. And that was at version 5.3, we used the Microsoft SSL structure, and we tried to make the software as Windows-like as we could. So the key management had a Windows look and feel to it, quite different from the Unix and Linux ones. Problem diagnosis was entirely different. The code was entirely different. And there was no support for cryptographic hardware. The general feeling was that this was a mistake, that it would be better if it was as many platforms were as similar as possible, and also in order to get cryptographic hardware support, it would be very difficult to change what we had at 5.3. So at version 6, we moved to using the GSCID SSL underpinning, which you know, we also use on Unix. So that made Windows, Unix, and Linux are all very similar to each other. We actually provided, unfortunately, we couldn't continue to use the key repositories, the key store files, as they're called, in the Microsoft environment. When we moved up, GSCID just doesn't support those, so we had to actually migrate the key repositories from the key store format to the key database file. And we provided command line and install GUI aids for that. There was also an unfortunate feature that when using the Microsoft SSL, if you were defining multiple OUs in the SSL peer channel definition parameter, the ordering of them didn't work when we moved to GSKIP, and customers had to actually reverse the ordering. Don't know how many customers that affected, but the people it did affect were very happy about it. So moving on to slide 36. Very recently, originally at 5.3, we've had LDAP CRLs for certificate revocation checking, but as a newer and better way of checking for certificate revocation is Online Certificate Status Protocol, OCSP, which was introduced on version 7.01, and that's only on Windows and Unix at the moment. We expect that to be introduced across the other platforms as time goes by. And moving on to slide 37, FIPS support. FIPS is a standard, a federal information processing standard, which checks, in this case, the it's 140-2 is the FIPS number, and it's checking the strength of cryptography that's being used. And so on Windows, Unix, and Java JMS, you could specify from version 6 onwards that I'm only going to allow channels to run where the cryptography is at a level that's strong enough to pass FIPS 140-2. Not supported on I or ZEOS currently. Moving on to slide 38 and handing over to Jonathan.
Thanks, Mike. Kalees has mentioned earlier, this is for the IBM I platform, that you can also, as well as using a private key store, you can also use what's called the Star System Store. The Star System was added in version 6 of MQ, and it allows you to perform certificate management the same way that you would for any other server that runs on the IBM I platform. So if you're used to configuring SSL for, say, your HTTP server, FTP, directory server, this allows you to configure your certificates in exactly the same way as those servers. So when you want to use the Star System Store, you go to your key manager, you change your SSL key R to Star System. This registers the key manager with Digital Certificate Manager as an application. You can then go into Digital Certificate Manager and assign any certificate to the key manager. This gets around the restriction that you don't need to have a strict labeling for your certificates, so you don't need to follow the IBM WebSphere MQ labeling system. And you also don't need to go to the key manager and set the key repository password. Okay, I'm going to pass back to Mike, moving on to foil number 39.
Thanks, Jonathan. Although ZEOS isn't my particular specialization, there's not an awful lot to say in the evolution of SSL TLS support on Z, apart from currency changes and moving up to higher level cipher specs and that sort of thing. As Rhys has already mentioned, you can always map the distinguished name from the received certificate or the certificate itself onto a user ID in Z, and that was there right from the beginning in version 5.3. But in version 6, the user ID was actually made more widely available. It was provided to the user in channel status and was passed into security exits. So if we move on to slide 40, and I'll hand over to Tamika.
Thank you, Mike. The last question, question 6, is, must the environment variable MQSSLKR always be defined, and does it apply to all WebSphere MQ versions and platforms? Can you please move to slide 41? The answer to question 6 is that the MQSSLKR environment variable does not need to be defined when using Java JMS client applications to connect to the SSL-enabled queue manager. Also, if you are connecting queue manager to queue manager, this environment variable is not required. The MQSSLKR environment variable can be used on the AIX, HPUX, Linux, Solaris, and Windows platforms. This concludes question 6, Joseph, I'm turning it back to you.
Thank you to our panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. At this point in time, Tanya, we would like to open the lines for live Q&A period.
Our first question comes from Tim Thurs. Your line is open.
Does SSL work for only point-to-point channels, or can they work in a clustered environment? And then if so, how do you handle key stores and personal certs in that cluster environment?
Okay, so the question is, does SSL work not only on point-to-point but also in a cluster environment, and if so, do I need to do anything differently when setting up the cluster environment with SSL?
I guess I can answer that. Yes, it does work. Obviously, you need to make sure that all of the members of the cluster have the required certificates to talk to each other. So there needs to be the appropriate CA certificates each key manager in the cluster.
Our next question, Raymond Powers, your line is open.
Hi, this is Ray. I have a question about a difference I've noticed between SSL behavior on Windows from the Unix platforms. On Windows, we seem to require having the full certificate chain of a certificate we want to authenticate, whereas on Unix, it seems that the root certificate, CA, is sufficient to authenticate. And I was expecting that requirement to go away when we went to version 6 and everything was using the GS kit. And I'm wondering if this is a fluke that it works on Unix or if it's something that ought to be working on Windows too.
Okay, Raymond. So the question is, he's finding on Windows he requires the full chain of trust to be present, but for Unix, you're saying that the intermediates are not necessary. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
At least they're not required in the local key store. They need to be on in the personal key store of the guy whose certificate is being authenticated, but when I want to authenticate him, I only need the root certificate to authenticate the whole chain.
Hi, this is Tamika. The certificate chain should be necessary on both sides, the complete certificate chain, especially on Windows. Without the complete certificate chain, then we're unable to verify whether the certificate is valid when it's being authenticated. I'm not sure why you don't need the complete chain on the Unix side. What you can do is, if you continue to have a problem, you can send that to us. But it should be that on both platforms, the complete chain is necessary.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question, F.J. Brandley, your line is open.
Thank you. I was wondering when we have queue managers that were installed without the SSL component. Of course, we've moved them up to 6.0.2.5 or 6.0.2.6 and added some additional patches on top of the release patch. What is the best way to get them to use SSL? Install from the base package the GS kit and the SSL, and then upgrade, and what happens to the patches beyond the upgrade level?
Okay. And which operating system are you speaking to?
AIX.
Okay, so for AIX, he's trying to figure out the best way to get SSL in place, depending on whether he should install the base and then the GS kit on top or not.
Okay, so on AIX, the product install is divided into different file sets, which can be easily installed fairly independently of each other. You do need to pick up the Keyman file set from the base install first of all, and then apply the 6.0.2.5 or 6.0.2.6 fix pack installation on top of that. And obviously you have to install the GS kit file sets as well. So for AIX, you shouldn't need to reinstall the whole product. You can just install the additional file sets for the SSL support.
So install the additional file sets, install the upgrade pack. What happens to the patches that were beyond the upgrade pack on the non-SSL part?
The files that you already have installed are not related to the SSL file sets, because if they were, you would have the SSL file sets on there. So installing additional files alongside the existing MQ installation should not be a problem because these are additional files. It won't change the file that you've already got as part of your core Queue Manager installation.
I hear you, but those are not at the level the Queue Manager is. The Queue Manager is at the 6.0.2.6 plus some patches. Is it you install from at 6.0, right? So you add again the maintenance for 6.0.2.6. What happens to the patches that you had installed on the Queue Manager that are beyond 6.0.2.6? Do you have to reinstall them?
It should not be necessary to reapply any patches or any parts of the core Queue Manager installation. What would happen is the base package will contain a file set, I believe it's called mqm.keyman.rte. You just install the 6.0.0 version of that one file set,
mm-hmm.
and then you apply the 6.0.2.6 version of that one file set on top, and that will get you to the 6.0.2.6 level with the SSL support.
You mean I can choose in the upgrade pack to the level what I install? Because typically it all runs in the background and you don't choose anything.
There are many ways of launching the AIX install. You can either use the SMITI graphical tool, which will allow you to select individual packages. If you highlight the package list, and I believe you press F4, and it will ask you which packages you want, and you select the individual packages, or you can use the install P command line tool and just specify the individual package that you want. So you can select individual packages without having to install the whole lot.
Okay.
Our last question, Renzo DC, your line is open.
Hi, I have a very specific question, Ann. I have an MQ client from a Windows platform trying to connect to iSeries server. But I'm using the MQ.x verb from the MQI, and even if I define the environment variables, especially the MQ SSL KR, I can get the connection. I send a specific question if, in the case that I use MQ.x, I need to specify into the options. What is the route for the T database? Or suppose that the MQSSLKR environment works.
Okay, a little bit difficult to understand. It sounds like maybe a mobile phone, but I'm wondering if the rest of the team or anyone was able to pick out the salient points there.
Yeah. If you're using, this is Mike Horan here, if you're using Connex, then what you specify in the data structure that you pass on the Connex call will take priority over the environment variables. So you wouldn't expect the MQSSLKR to be actually used in that case.
We do have a couple other questions. Sandra Cork, your line is open.
Yes, on slide 36. You mentioned with MQ701 that the OCSP support was enabled. Is that by default? It goes online to authenticate or verify certificate. And can you turn this off? How do you turn this off?
You should do this on.
Okay, and so the basic question was for slide 36701. She's wondering how you manipulate OCSP to be active or not, or is it just by default? And I'll let the team take a look.
Turned on, right.
Okay, hi, this is Andrew. There are two types of checking for OCSP, which you could sort of think of as being implicit and explicit, if you like. Explicit is where if you know the location of an OCSP server that you want to be checked, then you can give MQ a URL, or if you don't want it to be checked, then you don't give MQ a URL. And so that determines that, and that's either through the use of the auth info, authentication information records listed via the Queue Manager SSL CRL NL name list, or alternatively on the client through MQ AIR structures and the equivalents in the other language bindings. So that's the explicit option, and you control that by either giving MQ a URL or not giving it a URL. But there is also a second type of OCSP checking that can occur, which you could think of as implicit, which is that if a certificate itself may contain a field explaining where its own OCSP revocation server is. And the default behavior from MQ701 onwards is that if such a certificate extension is present, then that will be checked to see if that certificate is revoked or not. But that behavior can be switched off, and it is documented as to how to do that in the MQ security documentation.
Okay, so the implicit option can be turned off, and it is explained. Is that in the Info Center, or where am I finding security documentation?
In the Info Center, the MQ security section, there's a section in there about WebSphere MQ SSL TLS support for Windows and Unix platforms, and there's a section on OCSP in there and how to configure it.
Aren't there actually some service that's been applied to make it so you can turn it off altogether? Or is that in the Info Center?
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
There are no further audio questions.
Thank you, everyone, for your participation in the live Q&A period. At this point in time, I would like to move on to slide number 44 and pass the presentation to Andrew for a summary of today's session.
Thank you. Today, we've talked about a number of different topics around MQ, SSL, and TLS. We talked about different types of certificates, CAs, signer, and personal, server and clients, and the different terminology on the different platforms. We talked about the concept of a certificate chain and how to view it in the different tools that are available. We talked about renewing certificates when they're expired, and also how to check that it's set up correctly. We've also talked about the history of SSL TLS since version 5.3, and also setting up in terms of clients, the SSL KeyR, MQ Connex, and a range of other questions that were asked by phone about key store types, the refresh command, and other questions as well. So I'd just like to say thank you to everyone on behalf of the panel for submitting your questions today. And I'll pass the presentation back to Joseph.
Thank you, Andrew, for a great summary. At this point in time, we will conclude the OpenMind session.